To musician Wilder Scott, the town of Tulliver holds magic. It was that magic that helped to create him, and it is that magic that he is trying to capture once more. But not all magic is good magic. When Private Investigator Alan Flynn is hired to find the missing musician, he finds himself caught inside a world of death, a cursed town, and a mystery that threatens to kill anyone who stumbles upon it. The town of Tulliver holds a dark secret. It is a secret that has haunted its people for years. It is a secret that lives in the shadows. And it is a secret that wants out. This is Lyric the Novel. From award-winning author Jason Emmett comes a horror novel in the vein of Richard Matheson, Stephen King, and Peter Straub. Join us each week as the chilling story unfolds in this horror audiobook podcast novel. With a song, fear will be written, and through the lyric, darkness will be set free. Lyric the Novel, available now wherever you get your podcasts. Hey everyone, I want you to check out our sponsor, BustedTees.com. They sell really cool clothing and apparel, all of it inspired by your favorite shows, anime, sci-fi, video games, movies. That's BustedTees.com. And then at checkout, you want to use my name, Jason, 25945. That's all one word, Jason 25945. That's going to get you a discount, and it's going to help this show. That site again, BustedTees.com, like t-shirts, and that code again, Jason 25945. BustedTees.com, designs that pop culture.
Gentlemen, let's broaden our minds.
Who has a mixtape? Who needs a mixtape? Makes a mixtape. Who needs a mixtape? You do. But you need to go.
Don't you wanna listen to a mixtape? Raise the roof and move your feet. Come along and laugh with our mixtape.
Ha 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 ha.
Waka 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 waka. Don't you wanna listen to our mixtape? Sing along and clap to the beat. Settle in and listen to our mixtape. Another music vanishes. Enjoy your buttock sandwiches.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back once again to The Mixtape. I'm Jason Emmett.
I'm Casey Masterpiece.
I'm Twisted Kid Matt.
I'm Stewie D.
And this week, we're going to be talking about two fun and exciting things. The first thing we're going to be talking about is film scores. We've never talked about film scores on the show. We've talked about soundtracks, but we've never discussed film scores. Now, to alleviate any issues as to what a film score versus a soundtrack, do we all know the difference between a soundtrack and a film score?
Now I do.
I apparently didn't when I was sending you my picks.
So score is the music that is created for a film, whereas a soundtrack can be that or it can be singing. And a really good way, and I don't want to spoil anything here, but a really good way to think about it is to consider 1989's Batman, where you had
both.
Yeah. Prince release an album and then Danny Elfman's score, and they are separate. We'll actually kind of get into that, but think of it that way. It's a really good way. A lot of films have soundtracks. Not every film releases scores, even though most of them have a film score. And it's not to say that a song cannot be on, like somebody sang a song and that makes it onto that soundtrack or whatever, but a score is the music versus song. One of the things that's changing from here on out is we are all picking our top three. But if somebody picks the same one, they pick the same one. It's just the way it's going to go, which happened this week, and we're going to talk about it. And we're going to start with me. And basically what we're going to do is we're going to tell you which song or which score we picked for what film. I'm going to give you a little bit of information. We're going to discuss why this one is so important to you. But we're going to start with me and my first pick. And this is it right here.
We'll be right back.
right. So this is Back to the Future by Alan Silvestri. He actually wrote all the music for the entire franchise, not just the first film. Writing Back to the Future, Silvestri said it was really difficult for him. He had never written for such a large orchestral ensemble before. What's more is Spielberg wasn't really a fan of his previous work in Romancing the Stone. And I don't know if you guys know, Spielberg was an executive producer for the film Back to the Future. And he wasn't like on board with it. He's like, I don't really like Alan Silvestri's stuff, so I don't really know about this. Luckily, Silvestri knocked it out of the park and wrote one of his seminal works, most people would agree, and one of the most beloved scores in film history with the Back to the Future series. The score itself is built around several recurring ideas and motifs. There's kind of a twinkling, glassy motif for the concept of time travel. There's a caper-like motif with scenes that happen, like, at the mall. Doc has these weird, like, hootings and woodwinds and stuff going off that makes it feel very frantic when Doc's in it. So he really tried to keep things in tune with what was going on in the movie. When you go back in the 50s, we're given kind of a feel and flow of 50s stuff. It kind of gets in there, and we get that real bombastic, dun, 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 kind of gets your pulse racing.
I believe it's pronounced bombastic.
Mm. Mr. Bombastic. Mr.
Lova.
Semi-fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah. this is one of those ones for me that I can't... Actually, this is I'm just going to say this as a blanket statement across all of mine. I can't imagine this movie without this music in it now. Like, it's really difficult for me to think of Back to the Future without hearing that.
If Back to the Future didn't have that score, it would be like... Marty McFly was not played by Michael J. Fox.
Yeah, he was played like somebody weird by like
played
maybe
by,
I don't know,
a redheaded guy,
Eric Stoltz or somebody.
Eric Stoltz, the guy from Mask.
Dude, how fucking drowning.
Have you ever watched some of that? Like, it's so off-putting.
It's like really I don't think it would be funny.
Well, that was the problem. They said he just didn't quite have the chemistry of like.
And
the
they pretty
humor.
Much filmed the whole
almost the entire movie. Yeah. And
now
and
I want
all the scenes in it are.
I want everybody watching the video of this to go back to when Jay first started playing the clip of this movie and we all ended up recognizing it. You can see it in our faces. I think all of us ended up, I know I did, all of us ended up smiling when we recognized it because it just like
what
it made us feel something.
It will.
Of just like, it's Back to the Future.
I'm just going
to
tell you right now, Matt's are going to be the only choices where at least one of them, the other two, yes, one of them, I don't think anybody's... I'm probably the only other person who even knows what the hell it is.
I think I know.
No one's ever seen that movie.
But the other two, I am curious to watch their faces on, Matt. Yeah. Especially one in particular. I'm very curious. Yeah. So let's go into my second pick. Let's just say what I'm about to say. This could have just been all John Williams, but what's funny is only two of us picked John Williams. And
really,
yeah.
I kind of avoided it to be honest.
Yeah, and this is, and even saying that, I went a little off of what most people's.
John Williams is the Nirvana of film scores.
He kind of is. He's very prolific. And I picked a John Williams song for my second choice, but it's not maybe one you might have thought of. Here you go.
So
this is Jurassic Park and
watching dinosaurs.
To this very day, this is one of my all-time favorite film scores. What I'm about to say is not a lie. I put this film score on and listen to it at least once a month, just end to end. I love the Jurassic Park film score. This was MCA Records, released in May 25th, 1993. Contains most of the film's major cues. What's really interesting is how much this score changed the movie, because for those of us who've seen Jurassic Park and we know Jurassic Park, you got to understand typically when they would make a movie like this, it was kind of a monster movie, a kaiju movie, right? And that's what they expected the film score to be. And so it kind of blew everybody away when what he released was this. And I think everybody was kind of like, oh, that changes the feel and the pacing of the movie altogether. And it turned Jurassic Park into a fantasy film. And I don't think anybody was expecting that. And it's one of the reasons I love it so much. And like I said, I absolutely adore this score. I listen to it all the fucking time. Like all the time. I just
adore it.
I do. It's adorkable. And that's my John Williams pick. And then, I mean, like, listen, my third pick should not shock anybody.
You just had to know John Williams?
I didn't. No, that's my only John Williams.
Oh, okay.
But this shouldn't shock anybody. Seeing lots of confusion in faces shows that you guys are lame.
Willy Wonka?
No, motherfucker. That's Wendy Carlos. That's Tron.
Oh,
bitch.
Okay.
So the album actually was released in July 9th, 1982, the same exact day as the film. Wendy Carlos is really well known for her album Switched on Bach and also for the soundtrack to A Clockwork Orange. Also for The Shining. She did The Shining. Okay. She was really a good choice for the film because...
That's a weird pedigree, by the way.
Yeah. Well, she's really into, like, technology and classical, like, mixed and morphed together. And I think that helps with the whole fantasy thing. Heavy synthesizer use in the film. So there's a lot of synth... The score itself featured a mix of analog Moog synthesizer and this thing called the Krumar General Development System.
Sure.
They only made 10 of those. And
well,
one of them
like
was used.
Sounds like it runs on nuclear power.
It probably does.
Uranium made the Tron soundtrack.
There are pieces of this performed by the London Philharmonic Orchestra because Disney insisted that they bring them in because they were afraid that Carlos might not be able to complete her score on time. She said in an interview that she wasn't happy with the orchestra's parts, saying that her music with its variable time signatures was just a little too difficult for them to keep in time with it. So she actually went back through and redid some of it before the film was actually released. It's just one of those things. I can't imagine this movie without it. Part of what I love so much about it is those massive swells and that classic synth hook. And really, it puts me in the movie. So this is another one I just listen to on a somewhat regular basis where I'm like, I'll drop in Tron and just sit back and listen to the score. So I want to ask that before we go into Kevin's list. Do you guys ever just listen to film scores?
No. No,
not really, no.
It's rare. We'll talk about that whenever we get to my list, though. But, yeah, it's pretty rare.
So I do a lot. And my son is a big film score guy. He really likes John Williams' work, of course, because he's a huge fan of certain properties, which we will talk about here in just a few seconds because we're getting real close. But we're going to start with Kevin's and his first choice, which is this little ditty right here. Hey, Paisan.
Gabagool, pizza fajor.
Leave the gun, take the cannoli. I've never seen The Godfather, but I know the music.
Well, but you know the music.
Cool, yeah.
Yes, I know right? The music. This is The Godfather, or The Godfather Waltz is what you're hearing.
Yeah.
Nino Rota, 1972, one of the most famous scores, highly influential this music was. The music feels like a tragedy. Like you... This music feels like a tragedy, and that's what the film was. This music really encapsulates the like overall essence of the film and enhances it. Would the movie be what it was without it? I don't think so. The music captures all the emotion, the characters, creates an atmosphere, really does. Really captures that kind of Italian heritage thing too. It's very haunting, gets trapped in your head. Nominated for an Academy Award, was disqualified. Disqualified because it was discovered that Rota had reused parts of his score from Fortunella from 1958. This was a very controversial thing because a lot of critics and fans said that he had changed the music quite a bit. Also, it was his own material, so it's still original. He used his own material. It was disqualified, unfortunately. What made you pick this?
Well, I love, any kind of mobster movie or any kind of mobster show, I'm pretty much down with. And this is just such an iconic film score. I mean, it could work in Shakespeare, really.
Yeah.
It's very haunting, like Jay said, but yet slightly romantic in a way.
So I think a lot of it, too, I played a more, so it starts off way more like mellow and real quiet, and it starts building up. That was the midsection. It picks up, but it's all the same. That da, na, 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 na. But it just really picks up as the song rolls along. And like you said, very memorable. Matt put it, you know, I've never seen The Godfather, but I know the damn music.
Yeah.
There's a couple that didn't make this list that are very much like that. Think of, if I say Chariots of Fire, for example.
Never seen it. Know the movie.
But we all know the music,
rather.
Yeah.
Dun, 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 dun. Yeah. No, it's like people running on a beach. No idea what the rest of the movie's about.
Yeah, I've heard it's really boring.
Yeah. real quick, Kevin, I want to make a recommendation for you since you put The Godfather on here.
Oh, sure.
Have you ever heard of the band Fantomas?
No.
Okay. Mike Patton from Faith No More has a one of his many side projects.
What is it?
Mr. Bungle?
What is it?
Yeah, Mr. Bungle is another one of his side projects. But Fantomas is a side project he did with Dave Lombardo from Slayer.
What is
and
it?
Buzz from the Melvins.
What is it?
Hey, he's Matt. Distracting me. What is it?
So, Fantomas.
Matt wants
did
to get it
an
out.
Entire album of. I'm trying to just get this out of my out of
he
my brain.
He wants it out, but he can't. Have it.
This is what we put up with every time.
It's in so, his brain.
I
but
can
he
I can mute you right now. By the way.
So, I can.
You do that.
I can pinch Fantomas your head.
Did an entire album. I'm just gonna push through it. Where they did an entire
How'd you know?
Album of movie theme songs.
Oh, that's cool.
And they did a cover of the Godfather theme song.
Oh.
They also did a cover from the movie Spider Baby, which I absolutely love.
Never seen it.
It's really cool.
I know.
It's a fun movie.
I've heard.
Yeah, we'll have to talk about it on Twisted
I've heard Kids. Of That'd Baby cool. Driver.
We totally do that. We won't talk about that movie. Apparently, everybody in that movie is now have sexual assault charges against them.
Oh, Chili.
Yeah.
Which movie?
Oh. Baby we'll Driver.
I had not heard.
Yeah. Well, we all knew about Kevin Spacey, and now the kid who was in it. Yeah. He, so that's pretty cool, though, man. I'd have to check that out too because to hear it.
It's very bizarre, but it's really good. They also did like Rosemary's Baby and The Omen, and
They did like classic.
The Omen
shit.
Is fucking terrifying when you hear it. When Mike Patton's doing it, it's insane.
They just went all classic cinema. That's kind of
cool. They really did, yeah.
Kevin's next choice is not going to surprise anybody, and we're going to hear all the recognition on everybody's faces the second I hit this button. You ready?
We're going to hear it. Yep. Here's the recognition.
You're going to hear it. Yeah, you'll hear the recognition.
Fuck yeah.
Stop it, Stuart. We know you know what it is.
I can just see text rolling it up.
I'm just going to be straight. I was really shocked no one else sent this one in to be.
I avoided John Williams.
And I was actually thinking about avoiding, just not putting it on here because, like we said, like John Williams is pretty much the Nirvana of film scores.
But we can't avoid. What he means by the Nirvana is we avoid because we all avoided Nirvana a couple of times because we thought everybody else would put them on. But that's just it. I want people to put what they, hey, look, this is memorable to you. This is Star Wars, John Williams, 1977. John Williams is John Williams. He's done over 100 film scores. The man's in his 90s now. And this one sort of needs to be on this list somewhere, I think. Performed by the London Symphony Orchestra, released by 20th Century Records as a double LP, recorded in June 1977. Mm. Its main title peaked at number 10 on the Billboard Hot 100, with a disco version by Mecco becoming a number one single.
I feel like I've heard it.
Yeah.
Isn't it the Star Wars Holiday Special?
I don't know. I've never watched it, man.
God awful.
This soundtrack is. I've watched clips. I've watched.
Don't you dare. As a Twisted Kid. It's going to happen. We'll do it for Christmas.
This soundtrack became the best selling symphonic album of all time. Certified platinum by the RIAA. Won awards all over the place. Won Academy Award, Golden Globe, BAFTA, Grammy, you name it. In 2004, it was preserved. BAFTA. In 2004, it was preserved by the Library of Congress into the National Recording Registry, calling it culturally, historical, and aesthetically significant. In 2005, the American Film Institute named the original Star Wars soundtrack as the most memorable score of all time for an American film. I don't know that I could argue with that. I really don't. When putting it together, Williams assigned the characters of the movie and the scenarios they inhabited very specific melodies that reoccur throughout the film to help you connect with that person, which is just brilliant. He allowed those melodies to grow and expand in complexity as the story progresses. I mean, it's fucking Star Wars. Like, really?
We
all know it. Like, this is one of those kind of timeless pieces that, I mean, we knew it as kids.
Mm-hmm.
1977. I was the first movie I was taken to. I was a baby. I don't even remember it. Matt, later on, you have the Return of the Jedi and that shit, right?
First movie, one of the first movies I saw in the theater.
Right. Now you get my kids, right? They're watching Star Wars shit. So it's been renewed over and over again.
Oh, yeah.
And this film score has continued.
I didn't see it till it was re-released in theaters.
But I'm saying, even your generation had Star Wars material coming out. Mm-hmm. It's never not been coming out since it started.
Actually, I think I ruined this for my father.
You ruined Star Wars for your father?
Yeah. Because when cable first came out, they played Star Wars religiously on the TV, and I always had to watch it.
Yeah, I think
And he got pissed for watching it all the time.
But it's so weird because, like, when we talk about the music for Star Wars, like, we all know it. Like, and it's not just this. What's Darth Vader's theme? Right? We all know it.
Imperial March.
There you go. Yes, the Imperial March.
He's right there. So
John Williams has done all the music. He's retired. I don't know if you know this. He's retired from doing any more Star Wars, but he just did the Star Wars music for Disney, for Disneyland. What is it? I can't think of the name of the damn Disney
Force Land?
Force Land. No. That's Galaxy's Edge. He just did all the music for all the Galaxy's Edge stuff. So if you go to the theme parks today, you're going to hear John Williams scores playing as you're walking around Galaxy's Edge. It's just really cool. And he's been with this since the 70s. He's been with Spielberg since the 70s. Spielberg kind of recommended him to Lucas. That's how this whole thing got going, which is really cool. Kevin, you're, again, your third pick. There's no arguing this. It is a fantastic pick. I'm kind of upset I didn't think of this one. You guys ready for this?
Nice. I'm glad Danny Elfman ended up somewhere on this episode. Here's another one I avoided for the record.
Yeah, Batman 1989, Danny Elfman. I mean, yeah. This likely could have been on any of our lists. Elfman said that he had never read Batman as a child, preferring Spider-Man and the Fantastic Four, so he was given a copy of The Dark Knight Returns for inspiration, and when I heard that, I was like, oh, fuck yeah, I get it.
You're right.
Yeah, because this is Dark Knight Returns all over it. Produced by John Peters, producer John Peters wasn't sure about Danny Elfman. He wanted Prince to write music for the Joker and Michael Jackson to do the romance songs. Then have Danny Elfman combine their two styles together to do the score. But Danny Elfman and Tim Burton were like, no. They said, no, this isn't going to work. Burton said, my movies aren't commercial like Top Gun, okay? It's not going to work for me. Elfman said, first off, I had to prove myself. Okay, he's a quirky comedy guy, and here I am doing this Batman movie. Understandably, they were unsure and thought, we need somebody who does this kind of music. But nobody knew what kind of music it was. There really was no superhero music. There was just Superman. And we said, we know we don't want it to be Superman John Williams. And then there was an element with the producer in the studio of wanting it to be a pop score. There was definitely this moment of, Danny, we want you to collaborate with Prince and co-write the score. And I go, I can't do that. I love Prince, but not for the score. I already knew what the score was, and I already knew that if I collaborated, he'd be writing tunes, and I'd be orchestrating his tunes, and I'd essentially be a glorified arranger rather than a composer. Because he was world famous, and I was nothing. In the end, it totally worked. This is me at saying this. In the end, it totally worked.
Smart decisions all around so far.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah. It sounds like a lot of people were just like, no, I'm doing this way.
Right.
If we don't do it, it's not going to work. And
I mean, a lot of people putting ideas. Their foot down.
Yeah, great, interesting ideas. Yeah.
Yeah, but it would have just ruined it.
What I want to say about this is it worked because for a long time, this was the defining comic book music for any movie. Like, everybody was like, well, we need Batman music. We need that kind. And Danny Elfman went on to do stuff like Darkman, and, you know, so he did other stuff.
Spider-Man.
Yeah, he did the first three or Kajagoogoo.
He did the first three
Spider-Man movies. No, he was not with Kajagoogoo. I do want to say this.
Oingo Boingo, another ridiculous name.
The Mystic Knights of Kajagoogoo. That's fantastic.
Just Too Shy in like a really weird like carnival music sound.
And I ran.
Now we got Flock of Seagulls.
I'm just doing New Wave. It's just.
I thought you were just like
Danny Elfman does New Wave. So here's one of the things I think is really cool, if you guys didn't know this about this. So when the soundtrack was released, it was all Prince. They released the Batman soundtrack, all Prince. Which I think I was talking to you, Stewie, about this the other day, but yeah. Prince is only featured in like 5 or 6 minutes worth of the movie. All great stuff, by the way.
Most of it in the museum.
I love the Prince stuff. Yeah, Party Man. At the end of the movie, yeah. Trust is in it, but he's not featured that much in the movie. But his soundtrack gets released, but not Danny Elfman's.
It was inspired by.
People got mad. They wanted the Elfman music, so they released it. If you recall, the Prince version it's the Batman logo.
The yellow.
The yellow logo like it's supposed to be. Danny Elfman's is released, and it's the scene of the Batwing flying up over the moon.
Which is such a cool awesome, scene.
Very yeah. cool scene. Cheesy as hell. Loved every second of it, right? And they released his, and it sells like a bazillion freaking copies. So I think it's really cool that they went that route. I know Danny Elfman has come out many times and said, I've never worked on a project as hard as Batman. So, Kev, that was yours. You wanna give a real quick why, and then we'll move on to Stewie's.
Well, I mean, you pretty much summed it up. The fact that it was Danny Elfman, who's a guy that you would never expect to do like a superhero, you know, score like this. It just, he knocked it out of the park.
I mean, agree. Defining, like genre defining.
This score could almost be played with any kind of like war movie, to be honest. Mm-hmm. Like any kind of like Napoleon battle scene. I can hear this soundtrack, you know.
Keep in mind his his first movie was Pee Wee's Big Adventure, which also fantastic soundtrack.
Yeah.
Great soundtrack. Fits the movie to a T. And then to know, like, I remember when I heard, like, oh, this is some dude named Danny Elfman. And I remember I didn't know him from Oingo Boingo. I knew Oingo Boingo, but I didn't know he was that guy. And somebody's like, oh, he's the same dude that did Pee Wee's Big Adventure. I'm like, what? I'm like, this dude? Because this is badass, you know?
So. I mean, that whole movie, once you think about it, is completely unexpected with Michael Keaton playing Batman.
And wasn't supposed to,
Yeah, it was just known for comedy roles.
So who was supposed to?
Oh, God. Who were some of the people I heard were up for it? I want to say they were trying to get the likes of, like, Kurt Russell.
Oof. Christopher Walken.
Christopher Walken?
I'm joking. I have no idea.
Okay.
I just want to picture Christopher Walken as Batman.
They were vehemently against a comedy actor in the role. No, they did not like it at all.
Yeah. There's best some, part of The Flash, by the way.
There's some really cool...
Michael Keaton as Batman.
Yeah, I actually like the Flash movie, by the way. I just want to go on record. I thought it was decent.
It wasn't bad.
There was a lot of firsts in that movie. So Jack Nicholson was offered money and turned down the money and said, no, I want a part of the merchandising. So he still makes money to this
smart.
Day.
Very smart.
He made more money than anybody else.
So he's kind of like Michael Jordan with, like, he wants to
get very smart with the deal. So this is cool, too. I know I'm about to sort of veer off track, but not really, because although it is a sound, it is music, it's singing. For The Lion King, do you know the kid that does the voice of him when does the singing? So it's Jonathan Taylor Thomas does the talking of young Tevin Simba. Campbell. No, it's not Tevin Campbell. Everybody says that. It's not.
Why do I think it was Tevin Campbell?
I don't know. It's not. So they hire this kid to do the singing, and they offer him $2 million just to sing the parts for young Simba. And this kid is super excited, and they're going to take it. And then his mom says no. And they're like, what? And I watched him in an interview. I should remember his name, but I can't. He says, basically, well, my mom was smart about it. And she said, this is the biggest payday we would have ever gotten, you know, because they're going to pay you $2 million to sing. But what I want instead is, I think they took like $100,000 and then like royalties or something. Oh, it might not even be that much, but this kid still makes money today every time The Lion King is played. And he's
so
like,
kind of like the Nirvana kid.
Yeah, I mean, he could have shot, you know, that dude. We won't talk about him. Yeah. All right, so let's go
he's
into...
He's like that other guy we're not going
to
talk about.
Let's go into Stewie. Yeah, he might try to sue us too. Let's go into Stewie's first pick. A little ditty. You guys ready for this?
Sure.
That's right. Stewie picked Back to the Future as well. And I'm not shocked. It really works.
Yeah.
I got a little more information we'll give real quick on it, and then I'll ask Stewie about why I picked it. So, yeah, Stewie picked Back to the Future 2, and I picked Back to the Future 1. Back to the Future again, Alan Silvestri. The soundtrack was released on July 8th, 1985 by MCA Records. Here's the thing. It only included two tracks from Silvestri's score, the original soundtrack. The rest were two tracks from Huey Lewis and the News, two songs played by the fictional Marvin Berry and the Starlights, and one with Marty McFly with the Starlights. Also, and that's probably Johnny B. Goode would be my guess. Yeah. Also, a couple of songs heard briefly in the background of the film were on the soundtrack. This was wrong. The score is one of the elements that helped achieve the status of this film. So I don't know why they thought that was a smart move. It really wasn't. The score, to me, was an integral part of the overall experience. And for years and years and years, fans were like screaming for more. They were like, we want the score to be released. And finally it was. It didn't happen until you guys might not believe this. They did not release the damn score to Back to the Future until 2010. A little company called Entrada, who are kind of famous for film. Yeah.
I had no idea.
Entrada's very famous for film scores. They released a special 2-CD set. The first CD had the complete score used in the final picture, and the second had unheard of demo tracks and things like that. So not until 2010 could you get the film score to Back to the Future. So, Stu, I know why I picked Back to the Future. What made you pick Back to the Future as one of your scores?
Because the DeLorean did.
Just, that's it.
Yeah, no, the whole premise is pretty cool. I mean, I liked Michael J. Fox because he was pretty funny in Family Ties. So he came out, and I mean, the DeLorean is a big factor in it, but there wasn't like in a preview or anything. I was like, I got to see that because it looks cool. It just happened to come along, see it one day.
Mm. Yeah. I'm kind of shocked by your second choice. I'm not against it. I'm fully on board. I just wasn't expecting it from you, to be honest. This next one kind of threw me. I love this film score. I will not lie. And this is considered to be one of the better film scores out there. I just was not expecting Stewie to send me this. I like the look. There's a sense of recognition, but you can't quite place it.
Yeah.
Well, this is Dances with Wolves. No, it's Dances with Wolves. John Barry. John Barry, who did Dr. No and Out of Africa, same guy. This is 1990. I can't say this. I'm going to try. Basil Pelodorus was originally set for the composer of this film, but he ended up leaving to work on Flight of the Intruder, and then they brought in John Barry to replace him. The score was his interpretation. So weird. This was his interpretation of Native American themes and what they would be like. Okay. He prepared himself by listening to Native American music, but he didn't really incorporate any of that into the score because what he wanted was this is kind of weird, but he wanted it to be through the protagonist's eyes, which was Kevin Costner. Okay. So he really envisioned a boisterous romantic score due to the feeling of space in the film. And if you've seen Dances with Wolves, I mean,
yeah,
it's these big planes like and nothing. Yeah,
and little tiny people in the background.
They used a very sweeping sound for the music, and it fits perfect to me. He won the 1991 Academy Award for Best Original Score and the 92 Grammy Award for Best Instrumental written for a motion picture or television. This made me want to watch the movie again. I haven't seen it in years. I've been talking about it recently with my daughter, and I have to sit down and watch it. But Stu, I really wasn't expecting you to pick Dances with Wolves. So what led you to pick the music for Dances with Wolves?
So I know the next one you said it was because
for your mom. Is this one for your mom?
Exactly. Same thing.
That's totally fair. I kind of wondered if this was a Jeanette movie.
This was more just because I know she loved it. The other one is because she loved it, but I also liked the movie as well.
Me too. So I'm very on board with your third choice because we both have very similar reasons. Both of our moms were big fans of this next score. I do want to highly recommend for any film score fan out there, if you haven't listened to John Barry's Dances with Wolves score, it's fantastic.
The movie itself is amazing. The
movie
is
so good. It was okay when they redid it as Avatar, but it was much better when they made it as Dances with Wolves. So same movie, by the way.
Plot for plot. Pretty much is.
Dances with Wolves is an incredible film, though. So, Stewie, your next one is mildly controversial for fans. Those who love it, and we are amongst them. So this is Stewie's next pick. Guarantee you guys won't know what it is from sound, but let's find out.
Damn, it sounds familiar.
This is Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home. Leonard Rosenman.
Is the one with the whale?
This is the one with the whales. Two of them. George and Gracie, thank you very much. Yes. 1986 on this one. One of the most underrated Star Trek films, in my humble opinion. And one of my mom's favorites. Mm-hmm. And one of Stu's mom's favorites. Yep. And I always thought that was weird that they both loved it so much and saw something in it. And I, because of my mom, and I would watch this with her.
She ruined two VHS copies. Watched it so many fucking times.
Yeah, we have a story that on surface sounds a bit silly. We have to travel back in time to rescue whales so they can communicate with terrestrial beings and stop them from destroying Earth. But if you watch the movie, it works. It works really well. Also, we're coming off the heels of Wrath of Khan and Search for Spock that were way darker films. And I think they really wanted to lighten up the atmosphere a little bit when they made this. So they call in Leonard Rosenman and to do this score. And it fits, man. It fits wonderfully. He draws inspiration from both, you know, the kind of cheesier stuff and the sci-fi stuff, and he merges it together really well. He gives this thematic attention to Chekhov, which is kind of a rarity. And I just realized that there's a there's a composer named Chekhov, and there's somebody in the film named Chekhov. I'm pretty sure it's the composer. And I started thinking about that, and like, no, he didn't like theme the whole thing around Chekhov in the movie.
I didn't pick that up.
That would be weird. Either. I didn't either. Tell you.
I actually thought you were talking about that.
We're given, and this isn't, I mean, arguably, but a lot of people agree with this. Contrary to your thoughts on the film itself, this is considered one of the best themes of the film franchise altogether. There's a lot of drama, a lot of comedic moments, all in the music, and it just fits really well. Really enjoyable score. Scored a number of the Planet of the Apes films as well. So you guys just could. Oh, and he also filmed 1966 Fantastic Voyage, which I don't know if you guys remember that movie, but that's the one where they, Coolio shrinks down and gets injected into somebody's body to fix a heart problem.
I thought those Inner Space.
That Inner Space is, you may not know this, Inner Space is a pseudo remake of Fantastic Voyage. I believe if I looked into it enough, I'm pretty sure they were considering doing a remake and that morphed into Inner Space, as a matter of fact. So Stu, this is pretty much for your mom. Yes. I mean, just you grew up listening to it so much. Me too.
Yeah.
And it's really fun because it's Star Trek, but it's so much different than Star Trek. It's, I don't know.
Yeah, it's funny that it's like she likes Star Trek, but this was the one that she watched constantly.
This was probably one of my mom's favorite Star Trek films as well.
A lot of comedy in this one.
A lot of comedy. Like I said, they were trying to lighten things up a little bit because we just had two really dark stars. Wrath of Khan and Search for Spock. So we're going to go into Matt's list. And like I said, Matt, two of your songs I'm going to see recognition on faces. One of them, there's no way in hell. That's okay. We're going to start with your first pick, which is this little day right here. I've got the golden ticket. Stewie's face was like, I know this. I fucking know this. Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. Leslie Bricus and Anthony Newley. It's from 1971. Matt and I had a little discussion about this because I wanted it to be very clear. This is a musical. So there, of course, are lots of songs, but there's a heavy score as well that incorporates those songs. Very light, very airy. It really captures the feel of an earlier era. Like I said, it really does a good job incorporating the songs into the score itself. Taking pieces of those songs and kind of rounding them out. Leslie Bricus and Anthony Newley did also write the songs for the film, though. So they did the score and the songs. But this music does a really good job setting the backdrop of the scenes themselves. Just fucking go watch that boat ride scene if there's any question in your head.
Where it's doing the spoken word.
It's so freaky.
Yeah.
And it sets the tone.
Take some acid first.
And that's important.
Oh, no, don't do that.
That's important. And do you know why it's important? Because if you read, Roald Dahl doesn't fucking like kids.
No. Yeah, the Snowsberry shit.
This was not supposed to be, it was never meant to be a fucking, it's very anti-kid. And so there's a reason why it gets dark, and that's what the original managed to capture really well. Matt, why Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory?
Because he hates kids.
I fucking hate kids.
Too. Sorry.
I hate them too.
He has two. Well, three technically, yeah. But no, this movie, Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory specifically, is on my list of movies that I could put on and watch any time, day or night, and just watch
it. It's fair.
You know, top to bottom, so good. Earlier I mentioned listening to a score just randomly. This is the score that I would put on. I actually listened to it to study for whatever reason when I was in high school and college. I actually checked it out from the library.
I got the golden ticket. I can just see you studying at your desk and just standing up after a minute going, the candy man can.
I will tell you one specific thing not to do with this score / soundtrack.
Have
do
sex.
Not try to listen to it while you go to sleep.
No, why would you? Ooh, why would God, you?
It has got
or have sex.
Some of the creepy. Well, I mean, maybe. I don't
know. Oompa,
I mean, that's your kink.
Oompa,
let's say you're making love to a sweet Oompa Loompa.
I want it now. That was bad.
Racist. Don't
in
try
the
to.
Background of this in the background of the score. There's a lot of like really unsettling instruments playing. There's like somebody like strumming a drumstick across a spring and it's like ring.
Yep.
Yeah.
Is it a bassoon in there somewhere?
You will hear that. Was there a what? A bassoon? Probably.
Yeah.
I bet you that these guys had fun as hell just like scoring this and playing around and
And they all hated kids.
And they all hated kids, every one of them.
But this movie, you know, going back to the actual movie itself, by the way, this is kind of an episode meant for me since most of the music picks I pick come from movies.
True. It's very true.
Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory is a movie that, without fail, every time we watch it, I will cry. It just, there's something about it that just puts me back to being a kid when I first saw it.
That's weird.
And just I know you hate kids and all that, but.
They burp the
scene
bubbles.
Where they open the doors to the candy room for the first time and pure imagination starts playing.
Well, it's pretty. I mean,
it gets me every
time. It doesn't make me cry, but it definitely holds some magic and wonder when you hear it. It's like, you know, come with me and you'll be.
So I got a question. Was Gene Wilder actually singing that?
Yeah, that's Gene Wilder singing.
Okay, I didn't know.
Yeah.
All right, Matt, your second pick, nobody's going to know, so we'll play it. Here's Matt's second pick.
It's not the A-Team.
The fact that you knew what I was thinking of.
This is Zombie Dawn of the Dead by Goblin. So this is Goblin is one of those crazy Dario Argento composers who have been at Horror Hounds and stuff. We've been
70s
at.
Italian prog bands.
You know, it kind of reminds me of something out of a spaghetti western.
Kind of. That's what makes these their scores so weird and kind of works with Argento. I'm not a massive Argento fan, but originally from 1978, this was that old horror movie feel to some of it, but then it gets that kind of disco-y weird. It's very bizarre. Synth string, heavy bass guitar, drum fills, that pacing tempo that is synonymous with sci-fi and horror from the time, really. This one sounds a lot like a 70s cop movie to me. Goblin, by the way, is an Italian rock band who first became involved in scoring films in 1975. Matt, I mean, besides the fact that you're Matt, so it doesn't shock me, why did you pick this?
Dawn of the Dead is another one of those movies that... I can
now
watch
we need to be clear about
anytime.
The Dawn of the Dead thing.
Which one?
We're not talking about
I'm talking about the original George Romero directed,
but that's not
from 1978.
But most people
Dawn of the Dead
don't get that's you don't hear that soundtrack. Most people don't.
Correct. So that is actually part of why I picked this.
Because no one knows it,
and a lot of people
have owned over the years multiple copies of this film, and one of them has like four or five different versions of the film with different scores. Mm-hmm. There's one with just like incidental music that was playing in the mall that they filmed it in. There's the Goblin score. There's a score of, I can't remember the other people that did it, but my favorite one is the one with Goblin doing the soundtrack.
And so, score for it. So fans of the genres do actually do know this version, but most of us, like when I first saw Dawn of the Dead, the music that was in it. It was like Matt said, there are a couple different.
Yeah, the Gonk was in that, I bet.
Is that the one that's
Yeah.
That's the one.
Definitely a ringtone I've had over
the years
on like my Nokia phone back in the day.
Really interesting choice, and I'm kind of glad you went there just because it's so epically different than anything else that got talked about.
The fact that you picked the song that literally was the song that I think it's the same where they're like raiding an apartment building and just like killing everybody they see.
It's like the opening scene. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, Matt. Your fucking last, you cried at Willy Wonka. I doubt you cried at Dawn of the Dead, but I bet you cried at this next film because everybody fucking did. This is Matt's final choice.
Who doesn't recognize it?
Is it from Annie?
This is from Up. Michael Giacchino, 2009 from the film Up. Hard to argue. This one I hear a lot in my house, especially the last few months. Giacchino wrote a character theme based score, which to me really enhanced this film's viewing experience. He really based his score around the characters themselves. The album wasn't released until 2011, but the score was nominated for a few awards and won a couple of Grammys, a Golden Globe, and an Oscar. He also scored Ratatouille, where he won even more awards. So everyone talks about how Up grabs us in the first few minutes of the movie and takes us through an entire story in like 5 minutes with nothing but music and picture. We don't have any talking, there's no dialogue, and we know everything we need to know. It's amazing how it's done. Like I said, the opening scene has been notorious for bringing a lot of people to tears. And I don't know if any of it would have the same impact without this music. Like in 5 minutes, they tell us an entire story about this man's back life with nothing but images and music. And it's incredible. Matt, what made you choose Up?
Yes, it is one of the movies that makes me cry every time I watch it. I'm a big Disney Pixar softy. But on top of that, this music is the music that Connie walked down the aisle to when we got married.
Really? So, to that specifically, or just something from the movie Up?
I believe it was that specific.
So that's much like we were talking about with Godfather. There's different levels of how fast or slow this starts out, or it gets much slower after that. When
I think it might have been one of the slower, the slower versions of it.
Which I hate to say this because it was your wedding, but it gets a lot slower when she dies.
Yeah. Well, so the actual wedding.
Because you've never seen Up.
Oh, you've never seen Up. Oh,
no, yes, he has. He's in it.
Okay.
Shut the fuck up.
The little boy. Are you Russell?
No, I'm the dog.
Hello.
That sounds about right.
Squirrel.
You're not wrong.
But no, actually at our wedding, there was a moment where the music, and she didn't tell me she was going to do it. Like, she just played it, you know? So I'm like, you know, this is the story of our wedding. I'm looking down the aisle at her and, you know, it's, you know, happy stay in my life kind of thing. And
came at me.
I get this look of like, I know this music, but I don't know why I know this music. And then I realized what it was and I immediately just start crying because I'm like, damn it. So
you guys don't know this about Matt, but he's a big softy. I just want to be clear.
I have to try to look like a biker, just to avoid
so people don't beat you up all the time.
Yeah, pretty much. That's pretty much why I picked this one. It holds a very special place in my heart, as well as I'm hoping Connie's as well. So,
well, I think. Yeah. I think those are really good choices all around, everybody. I mean, we really hit the gamut of, Yeah, you guys fucked that word up for me forever. I just want to be clear.
We could have put the X-Men theme song on there.
The Gambit.
Actually would be the Gambit.
Seriously, though, we really covered some really good bases on those, and I was really happy when everybody's came through. With that being said, I would love to hear what's you, the listener, some of your favorite film scores are. Let us know.
I'm curious.
Skiznot, I would love to hear what Skiznot's on.
Yeah.
That'd probably be really cool.
So actually, Skiznot, if you were here, this is a question to you from me. If you were to take any movie and redo the score of it, which movie would you do?
Good.
There you go.
Challenge.
I know that when we first put this out for the scores and everything, I was like, oh, dude, I think I have a good one. But it's a soundtrack, so it screwed me up.
Yeah, we'll do more soundtrack stuff, but we wanted to talk about some of the scores. We've never really done that. Like, and I think we all can agree, you know, the music really makes the movie sometimes. We've all seen where people have taken clips and said, okay, here's the opening to, and it's a really good one if you've never watched it, here's the opening to Different Strokes, only if we put creepy music behind it, and it changes everything. Well,
they did that with Gordon Jump at the Bike Shop.
Yeah, they don't change anything of the opening. Yeah. They just put creepy music, and it looks way different. So we're going to cut here, and then we're going to go into our recast segment, so please join us for that. Right after these important messages from someone. Till next, we have the opportunity to speak to you fine folks at home. Remember to always
stay awesome.
There are times that you feel like your head is a big old bucket filled with fuzzy dreams, 'cause you wish you were a Muppet, but you can't play the music and you can't light the lights, and it's all you can do just to make it through any more of these lonely nights. So you grab your favorite mixtape and you pop it in the slot, and you scream two words along with all the nerds, 'cause right now it's all you've got. Stay, stay awesome. Plant a tree inside your heart and let it blossom. You gotta live your life, don't stay curled up like a possum. And if you think you're going crazy, don't go,
go.
Just
stay.
Stay, stay awesome.
All right.
Plant a tree inside.